This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
I'm Mark Packer. As you know, Jordan Cornette ready to roll. Jordan, good morning. What's going on?
Pack, it's good to be here with you. I look forward to when Wes returns. For now, I wish you would have undersold me so I can over deliver rather than oversell. That's a lot of pressure for 3 hours to fill the seat of one Wes Durham. I don't know if I'm up to the task.
You got
it. I'll do my best though.
You can handle it. We've done this dog and pony before. This is like riding a bike, man. It's like Notre Dame going to the second round of the NCAA tournament. You got this. You got this. Lay up.
I don't know if that's the comparison. I don't know if that's the one that works, but we'll take it. I know that you run the point very well, Pack, so I'm looking forward to a great show. And we got some really good guests today, too.
Great guest, and we'll get into all that stuff here momentarily. But I tell you what now, yesterday during the radio show on Off Campus, checking scores real quick, and I see it's 25-7. Northwestern over Louisville, and I'm going, whoa, time out. Chris Weber timeout. What are we doing here? How about that yesterday? First of all, Georgia Tech gave us the crazy down 17 at the half, win the round one game in unbelievable fashion, and then the number two seed, the Louisville Cardinals. By the way, Jeff Falls will join us later in the program. holy mackerel, 25-7. Another slow start, but you know what? Championship teams find ways to win, Jordan.
Yeah, and I knew it was going to be kind of a back and forth, at least feeling out in the first half with Northwestern, their blizzard defense, and how Coach McEwen's defensive approach truly turns the opposition over. They're generating 20 turnovers a game, and it showed there in the first half where Louisville was playing on their heels. I mean, you saw a Louisville team that is typically the aggressor be the passive team that had those 11 turnovers in the first half, and I think some of that pressure – early on, at least, it appeared like it overwhelmed Louisville. In listening to Coach Walls and some of his quotes, he said, you know, we just needed to be stronger with the basketball. And it was truly that. Once they started to have those productive, competent possessions and show that they had a penchant for taking care of the basketball, that knocked a lot of the wind out of this Northwestern's team's sails. And then Cochran, a freshman, best freshman in the conference this year, dominant on the backboard, could play through her on the inside. I thought Louisville started making some shots, and of course Dana Evans turned it on a little bit too. So it was fun to see them adjust to what looked like a game that was going to run away with the seventh seed in the upset, but figuring it out and having a dominant second half. And then defensively, what they did on Lindsey Pullum, 2,000-point scorer, to limit her to 1-for-11 and 4 points, that's championship-caliber performance.
Yeah, that was a gut check yesterday. There's no question about that. Louisville now 4 straight trips to the Sweet 16. That's the 8th time it's happened since 2010. Again, just emphasizing the great job Jeff Walls has done. But, you know, it seems like it doesn't matter if it's the men's tournament or the women's tournament. You always have one of those games, Jordan, that, you know what, you don't have the A game.
Yeah.
And you just got to figure out a way to survive in advance. You hear that term all the time, but it's really the truth. And this was a perfect snapshot of that description because Louisville was in no man's land, down 25-7. And really, you know, they're down 40-28 midway through the third quarter. And you're thinking, hey, is it going to happen? Then they go on a crazy 17-0 run. And guess what? Rearview mirror, catch you later. They move on. But everybody contributing. You mentioned Dana Evans, who's been so great during her career. But she struggled shooting the basketball. The turnover assist ratio has been 1-1. Which is not normally her game, but other folks stepping up, making plays. You mentioned Cochran, the freshman, making some big free throws coming down the stretch, ended up with 13 points, 15 rebounds. That's what championship teams do. Hey, you know, our star doesn't have the A game? Great, my turn. Let's step up, make plays. But just a really, really big win yesterday for Louisville, an important win for not only them but also the league.
Yeah, Pack, and I think it also speaks to tournament experience, right? You know, Evans had played in 2 NCAA tournaments. Evans is your leading scorer, or second leading scorer with 14. Your leading scorer, Smith, she played in 2 NCAA tournaments with Cal in 2018 and 2019. So I think those players that have been in this position, that understand the finality of what's in front of you, that understand the pressure that comes with tournament play, these were two players that combined for 30 of your points. split. That's 15 a game. They went for 16 and 14. So you got to have players who have experience. I'm curious to talk to Coach Walls about that when we get a chance to talk to him, to say, did you lean on your players who had the tournament experience? Because you got a young group. You got a lot of players who don't have that experience. When you're down like that, do you lean on your experienced players? It appeared that Louisville did, because they propelled them to the win.
No question. Speaking of the experience that we're talking about, two-time ACC Player of the Year, Dana Evans, talked about the resiliency of her team yesterday.
Well, I just had to stay positive for my team. I knew that they were kind of shocked, and we didn't expect to get down that much. But we had to stay together as a team and just keep fighting, because we knew we were going to make a run. They came out and punched us in the face, but we responded well.
She's a star, man. I am such a big fan of Dana Evans. I just like the way she handles herself. And even though her game is struggling, per se, when you have that expectation, she's still finding other ways to contribute, right? That's what leaders do. And you've been a part of those kind of teams, Jordan, that, hey, you know what? When it gets to be tight, who's going to step up and get the job done? Just never know.
Yeah, 100%, Pac. And you heard it from Dana, where she said, we knew, we knew. Those are players that I love to play with, the ones who are extremely talented, that carried the confidence for lesser talents like me, who, I'm not being self-deprecating, I feel like I had the talent. But when you look at the mega talent, somebody like Dana, who's a two-time conference player of the year, she says, I've got it. We've got it. Believe. That's a calming influence that a lot of teams in tournaments don't have the luxury of leaning on. When your best player, a generational talent to the university, can come out there and say those kind of things, it lifts up the sum of all parts to go out there and play some big-time basketball. So what they did in that second half, starting with limiting themselves to only 5 turnovers against the Northwestern team that generated 11 in the first half, defensively what they did, the intestinal fortitude to play through the inside, dominate the glass, make some big shots, balance scoring, speaks to me that, yes, like you said, Pac, it was the one hiccup maybe along the way that could get them into the Final Four in a title game, and from there, who knows?
Yeah, here's the other thing I love about Dana Evans, and I go back to watching a couple of her games this year where Louisville had gotten pushed. You never see panic on her face. You know, there's something about championship eyes. I know this sounds crazy, that you can almost look at somebody's eyes when you get in those moments, and you know what? They have supreme confidence at what they're doing. And hey, you know what? This is no big deal. Let's just go out and get it done. This is what we do. This is what we've been practicing for, right? And Dana Evans has that. She's just got that look, that stare, that it's time to get to work. Let's go. It's what we do. And that's what they did yesterday.
Yeah. I mean, Pac, that's what people say about, you know, the WNBA. They say it about the NBA. You got to have two stars to really do anything in postseason, because you're going to need great players. You can put together a good season in the regular season, but in the postseason, that talent is the differentiator. And when you look at this Louisville team, their star, their number one talent in Dana Evans, is that person that can say, it's postseason time. Pressure bust pipes, but not ours. We know what it takes. There's a culture within this program. You know what I'm about, which is winning and producing. And when you have the ability to lean on somebody like that, that is a separator. That's a differentiator. Northwestern had a 2K scorer who in that game went 1 of 11 for 4 points. It's not to take away from Lindsay and the talent she is, but it separates between somebody like Lindsay and somebody like Dana.
After the game, Jeff Walls, the outstanding coach for the Cards, said, you know what, there's other things on his mind before they worry about preparation for their next game Sunday against the Oregon Ducks.
What are the challenges leading up to 7 o'clock on Sunday night being in San Antonio?
Well, first off, I think we're day 8, and day 10, I think, is when they'll help us with laundry. So the first challenge is I won't have to wash my drawers in the sink, hand wash them. And then I've been using the blow dryer, Kent, to make sure that, you know, I get them good and crisp. So they'll actually do some laundry for us, which is a wonderful thing.
hey, I know there's a lot of pressure in the tournament. But when you're doing laundry in your own sink, that could be a problem. That's pressure. Forget being down 25-7 in the first. When you're worried about, hey, you know what? It's laundry day. Let me go crank up the soap. Get the drawers out. Jordan, seriously, what are we talking about here? Huh?
Well, Pack, for one, it seems like a pretty simple solution to me. I'm a superstitious guy. If I go on a run like Coach Walz's team did in the second half to beat Northwestern, are you ready for this? Maybe I'm not washing my boxers.
Uh-oh.
Maybe I'm keeping those drawers as is. Maybe it's something we need to talk to Coach Walz about. I mean, do you want to win a championship? Do you want to get back to the Final Four? Are you a superstitious guy? Also, there's always the option of going inside out, too.
I was going to say, you can always maximize double the time. Inside out is a 2-for-1 special. I mean, that's the old trick. But, hey, nevertheless, survive in advance. What that means.
But I'll tell you, in all seriousness, though, going back to what Coach Walz is talking about, it's the discrepancy also between men and women's basketball, right, which has come to the forefront on a national spotlight as of recent. But as we all very well are aware of, at least in sport, me playing in college, was that discrepancy and that drop-off from men's and what they're afforded to women's has been going on for a very long time. So for it to kind of burst on the scene doesn't mean it's new, but it means that now all the eyes are on it, as it should have been in the past. And we see this with people who are marginalized. And I hope that this is going to be a trend towards improving situation, making things better, because women's sports, something to be celebrated, not an afterthought.
Yep, amen to that. A couple other notes from yesterday. And again, we've got a busy show. 844-SAY-ACCN, the number. Congratulations to Wes Moore. I know the Pack had the day off, chilling out. They're already in the Sweet 16. They get ready to play Indiana, who was a winner yesterday. But Wes Moore yesterday wins the WCBA National Coach of the Year. Congratulations. He's done an awesome, awesome job. Now, keep in mind, Nell Fortner was the ACC Coach of the Year this year. Wes Moore wins the National Coach of the Year. The league is blessed to have both of them, but Wes has done a great, great job.
Great job. And to me, I always talk about coaches who don't just build good teams, but build a culture, right? Sustainability and a relevancy. And that's what you're seeing there at the Pack and what Wes Moore is bringing. So I think it's an absolute proper decision, but it also speaks to the depth. I mean, Coach Fortner, Coach of the Year, this is a different award going outside the conference to Coach Moore and what he's done there with the Pack. And then, of course, we're sitting here talking about Coach Walz and what he's doing. So, to me, it illustrates the depth of coaching and talent that we have in this conference, which is on both men and women's, and for it to be celebrated on the women's side. It's a beautiful thing, and it speaks to a bright future when you have people in place that are not building good teams but building culture.
One other thing that should be mentioned, and this transfer portal and declaring for the NBA draft, I mean, literally every 5 minutes you have to check your phone and the ticker. But yesterday, another big name pops up in Chapel Hill. De'Ron Sharpe decides, hey, you know what? I've enjoyed it, but I'm going to go ahead and test the waters here and see what this NBA deal is about. What was your take on this? Did it surprise you or not?
It didn't surprise me, because when a guy is of that much intrigue, with that much upside, with that skill set, athleticism, and physical presence, it's always going to be a conversation. And when you go to North Carolina as a blue-chip recruit, a lot of times when the season concludes, the next level is going to be the conversation, right? With De'Ron Sharpe, I am curious if COVID played a role in this. How much fun was it for any basketball player in this COVID era this season? So if his only experience in college is playing in the COVID era, it's not going to be too enticing for him to say, well, I know something different. I'm going to definitely come back because it'll be different next year. I think if it's all you know, it kind of leads you towards there's got to be something better out there. So it's no knock on Coach Williams. It's no knock on the program there. I wonder if this is cultivated from the era we're in, where he's like, I don't want to be going through all this in this regard. There's an allure of my professional dreams, the money that's there, and the opportunity to achieve that dream. So I was not surprised at all. I think coupled with the Kessler decision for Kessler to transfer makes it concerning, because you still don't know what Armando Bacot, what Caleb Love, what even RJ Davis are going to do. So what is this lineup going to look like next year? One that was led by its front line in Kessler, Sharp, Bacot, and Brooks. Well, Brooks is gone to graduation. He's not going to utilize that next year. Kessler's gone, and now Sharp's gone. What's Bacot going to do? That cupboard could be bare by the end of the weekend. Who knows? So one thing I know about Coach Williams, he's a legend. He'll attract talent. It's Carolina. They, too, can use the transfer portal in this wild year, which will be wild. But I was not surprised, Pac. Were you?
You know, I'm in a tough spot here for just a personal reason. Number one, I'm selfish. when it comes to watching college basketball. So I want everybody to stay 4 years, but I know that's not reality. For sure. Right? It's not reality. So,
how's that going for you?
Well, it's not. In fact, it's not at all. But I am all for every one of these student athletes chasing your dream. I mean, I always put myself in a position where I go, hey, you know, if I had a son and he was 7'1" and played for North Carolina, and after 1 year said, hey, Dad, I think I can go to the NBA, man, go chase your dream. That's what it's always, can always come back and get your degree. So I'm torn on this one because from a selfish standpoint, I want to see college basketball prosper. And to me, you see teams that get old, that have juniors and seniors. But I also understand that's not the real world anymore. That, hey, for the most part, you get a talent like that, you better enjoy him while you can, because in all likelihood, he or she are out of here after a year. So it's a goofy world, but nothing surprises me. You know, when I saw the news about Kessler this week, I was like, wow, son of a gun, I think he's going to be a terrific player. If he doesn't feel right at North Carolina, I mean, just exactly where does it feel right? But you got to do what you got to do. Only that guy understands what it's like to walk through those with those shoes and say, this is not for me. So I don't know, Jordan, it's conflicting, but that is the world we're in. And now with this transfer portal where literally anybody can get up and leave overnight, head on a swivel. Being a coach these days, I can't even imagine how difficult it is. I don't care if it's football, basketball, softball, whatever, but this transfer portal where anybody can get up and go and there's basically no penalty, that's the world that we're in. So you better figure it out as a coach.
Yeah, and you know, I'm obligated to speak to the player side of this, back is, you know, players have that same issue. I mean, they go to sleep every night wondering if their coach is going to get a better offer. Wonder that's if right. Porter Moser, how do you think those Loyola kids feel? Like,
that's right.
Porter Moser may bounce at any time for Indiana or any of these other jobs. Maybe he won't. But they are also, too, lying in the bed of, well, what's my coach going to do? If somebody comes and plucks him better, he sold me out. I'm the starting shooting guard for the next 4 years. He's promised me 25 minutes a game. What if somebody new comes in here tomorrow because he's got a better contract? I just like that it's an even playing field. It's not ideal for either, but like you said, it's the world we're living in.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Tell you what, this could be a screeching halt to the Jordan Cornette experience. I'm Packer and Durham. If I got to listen to Justin Bieber anymore, I'm going to hurt myself.
My day is made. Let's do the show till 1 o'clock. I'll go all day. You gave me Bieber, I'll give you the world, Pack.
I'll tell you what.
Give me the world.
You give me Bieber, I'll be looking for sharp objects in the room that can hurt myself and just put it right in my knee and hopefully feel better immediately. All right.
You got to expand your mind, baby.
Listen,
music right there.
I told you before the show, I saw Justin Bieber kiss my daughter's hand in front of me. So Bieber's on my list, if you know what I mean. Stay away from my daughter,
you know,
Justin
Bieber. Doesn't want to see you in the streets. Yeah.
No, he doesn't. Yeah, or anywhere else, for that matter. All right, we're going to try something here. We are going to reseed the men's Sweet 16, all right? And
perfect.
We just like doing accounting. We'll see this. Everybody will have their own agenda on how you do this. So before you give me your Sweet 16 here in the new listing and the reseeding, what was your approach in doing this? Because everybody can come at 18 different angles on this.
Well, yeah. So, Pack, I cut it in half, right? Because the top eight are the teams I envision advancing in their Sweet 16 matchup. So I felt conflicted to pick a team in the top eight that's going to lose their Sweet 16 matchup.
Got it.
So right away, that carved it into the winners 1-8 and the bottom 9-16 as the teams who aren't going to advance. So are you the best of the teams that don't survive at 9-16 is how I look at it. Wow, that picture is maybe one of the best pictures I've taken.
That's spectacular.
I digress, though.
I got to tell you, before you go through your list, that photo right there looks like on the Young and the Restless. Jordan Cornette stars.
Right?
It's like, you're right. You look like a matinee idol.
I look like I'm here for the drama, for sure.
You look like you're a backup singer for Justin Bieber is what it looks like. Right there. That shot right there.
That's exactly what it looks like. It's like there's one day where the shave, after I've shaved cleanly, that it comes in perfect.
Yeah.
That's day 5 of the cycle. That's peak Jordan Cornette. But let's get to the reseeding of my Sweet 16. I think Baylor and Gonzaga are headed for a collision course in a championship game. I believe Baylor wins that game. So Baylor's my number one.
Wow.
Gonzaga making it to the finals is my number two. Florida State is primed in this Michigan matchup. And I think they haven't looked their best, but they're about to look their best. And it's because they have personnel to match up with Hunter Dickinson in that game versus Michigan. When you've got Koprivica, when you've got Engholm, when you've got 10, 11 guys and any of them can go for 20, like Anthony Polite did going for 22, his previous high being 15. That puts them there. I want more potential and what I expect from Florida State at 3. Loyola has the best win of the tournament. So how are they not in your top five pack? I'm curious to see what you have there. They beat Illinois. They played beautifully and dominated the game. Oregon dominated Iowa. In my opinion and how they looked, maybe the second most impressive win in this tournament. So I put them both up there. Couple SEC schools doing really good things at 6 and 7. I think Syracuse is going to upset Houston, so I put Syracuse there. Michigan at 9, if they had Isaiah Livers, they'd be in the number one spot most likely. They do not, and they're going to lose to Florida State. USC's impressed me, as has the Pac-12, but I think it's going to be a difficult time for the Pac-12 here with 10, 12, and 13 going down. Villanova, it's not as much about this team as it is about the culture. For them to be even in the Sweet 16, speaks to what Jay Wright has built there. This team without Colin Gillespie doesn't really have any business being in the Sweet 16, but yet they have enough talent. The coach is elite, and here they are. I did Oral Roberts in their game versus Ohio State. Max Asemus is a flat-out stud, the nation's leading scorer, and has proved it. And he's got a pretty good Robin to his Batman in O'Banner, Kevin O'Banner, who could step out at 6'8", knock down to 3. So they give that true Cinderella feel, which I love. I feel pretty good about my Sweet 16 reseeding. How about you?
Okay, mine's totally different. My approach is different. Okay. I didn't go necessarily who I think is going to win. I just did a combination of the regular season and what we've seen so far in the postseason. Gonzaga, Baylor, I'm with you. I think these are the two best teams.
No, I got to stop you, Pac.
Go ahead.
I got to stop you real quick.
Yeah.
How about you with the blazer, shirt, and tie on?
Yeah. Well, ESPN.
How about it, people?
Well, first of all, ESPN forced me to wear it. I burned all that as soon as the photo shoot was over with. But that was totally forced by ESPN. The suits made me do it. Otherwise, I was coming in with a baseball hat and a pair of jeans. No, it's not a good look.
Are the suit.
No,
the suits didn't make you do it.
No,
you are the suit.
No, that would be a flat-out lie is what that would be. But back to this list, which is more lies. Gonzaga, Baylor, I kept 1-2. I think they are 1-2. Michigan, I know, like you said, Livers out. Still think they're incredibly talented. That game with Florida State's going to be a war coming up on Sunday. I got the Noles at the 4 spot just because I picked them in the Final Four. And by the way, I do think they're going to win this weekend as well. Bama's impressed me. 5 guys that can score. Nate Oates done a great job. Houston just does their thing. I kind of wasn't sold on during the regular season, but they found a way to win that Rutgers game. They had no business winning that thing. They're going to crash the glass against Syracuse. We'll see how that plays out. I've been impressed with Loyola. How can you not be, right? They beat the ACC champ in round 1. They beat the Big Ten champ in round 2. We'll see if they can handle the Pac-12 champ in round 3. Arkansas is coming. I like the direction they're heading in. I got them at the 8 spot. Syracuse out of nowhere. Here we go again. Double-digit seed. Nobody does it better than Syracuse as a double-digit seed and attorney. They're 9-2. Best record ever since Dirt. And dangerous. I think they could beat Houston. 10 SC, pick your favorite Mobley. Good grief. These dudes are bad dudes now. Yeah. The reason I got Oregon lower than you, they've only played 1 game, but they're healthy and they're dangerous. USC, Oregon will be a great game coming up this weekend. Creighton's weird, right? We saw them get woodshedded in the Big East tournament. They've taken care of business, but, man, they're going to pick the wrong team to run with this weekend against Gonzaga. UCLA, nice story, just not buying them yet. I know they've won 3. You can't deny it. Villanova, without Gillespie, this is where you find them. Oregon State, I don't know how they're doing it. They took Louisville's spot when they won the Pac-12 tournament. And Oral Roberts, as you mentioned, a great 1-2 combination. You know what? They're not even shooting the threes well, which is what they did during the regular season so well. But they've turned 36 turnovers into points. So, hey, Sweet 16, you know who? Hey, your guess is as good as mine. Who knows how this plays out?
Pac, I get there's no formula to this thing, but I got to imagine Josh and Drew are just as confused by this one with yours. Is Florida State, they're playing Michigan.
Yeah.
You think Florida State beats Michigan?
I do.
Florida State's at the 4 line Michigan's at the three line. Make sense of that for me.
Well, I just did. I told you. I took the whole season into consideration. I think Michigan this season has been a better team than Florida State this season. Now, again, we're going to go play this weekend, and I like Florida State to win the game. So take it for whatever it's worth. Mine's really a combination of regular season, postseason, as opposed to who I think is going to be the eight winners and the eight losers. So I think that's one of the reasons our lists are so all over the place there.
Yeah. Well, let me just ask you this. Let's pull up his seeds again. Can we pull up Pac's Sweet 16 seeds again, how he's reseeded it? And I'll ask you this as we pull it up. Do you want to trust a suit in Mark Packer?
No.
Or a man of the people here in a sweater. In his top 16? That's all I'm going to ask you.
No,
suit or the comfy casual sweater guy? No. You make the decision.
No, I am already uncomfortable looking at me in a suit. Forget wearing one. Forget all that nonsense.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
All right, Jordan, we have seen in the history of the NCAA tournament, individuals just get on a run and teams going, hey, Superman, here's his cape, let's go, right? And you go back as far as you want and you can always find an incredible story. You get a sense right now with what Buddy Boeheim's doing for Syracuse, where the basket's the size of this table right now. And you saw it really for the most of March, and now we've gotten into the dance, and Buddy Boeheim is in fuego, right? And you just looks like every time he touches it, he's going to make it, right? Just going to make a shot. So big picture, how does this compute with other ACC stars in the NCAA tournament who have gotten on these kind of runs? We're going to give you some stats here to put things in perspective, but hey, you've been a part of this NCAA tournament. You've seen stuff like this happen where guys just catch fire and you ride that wave as long as you can.
Yeah, and I'm looking at that list and I'm enamored with some of the names on there. I mean, Kenny Anderson, Lynn Bias, Dennis Scott, Bobby Hurley, like Monroe, McClinton. McClinton was a tough out for those Canes about a decade ago. Like, that's an incredible list. To me, I mean, this is Buddy at his best, and everybody knew Buddy had this in him. He, when he heats up, he's as talented a scorer as any in the country. He's got size to score over a defense, but a lion's share of the work's been beyond the arc, a place where percentage-wise, to be honest, he's struggled throughout the season. He's put it together here in March, and what it's allowed it to really is the other four guys have been consistent threats as well on the floor. Joe Girard at the point guard position has been under a lot of criticism, and to be honest, deservedly so at times this year, with people believing Richmond should be the guy. Well, Girard is playing his best basketball at the most important time. He's taking smart shots. He's efficient. And when you have guys that, if you put all of it on Buddy Boeheim, these other guys can get theirs, makes them a little bit tougher of an out. But yet still, Buddy is going to have these type of performances on through. The challenge becomes it's Houston defensively they're facing now. But I look back on the two teams they played. Defensively, they're two really good teams. San Diego State, one of the best in the country defensively. West Virginia, no slouch defensively. And Buddy still put up these numbers. So why can't he do it against Houston? He's locked in. He's bunkered into the same place there in Indianapolis, honing the craft, ready to be unleashed again, see some sunlight, get some daylight, go out there to a gym and do it all over again. He'll need to, but it's how Houston does it defensively that gives me a little bit of trepidation. They've got those 6'5 with linked athletic guards that are going to switch everything. They're going to try and run him off the line, make him a driver, and their help side is great. Houston is going to pose the most real matchup that Buddy's seen so far in this tournament, but he is on fire.
Here's two things. Number one, I think he'll play well. Again, why wouldn't he be, right? He's been fantastic in March, regardless of who's on him. Number two, to me, do you get other consistent scoring from Syracuse in this game, right? We've kind of seen that so far where, hey, yeah, Buddy's been hot, but guess what? And I think Syracuse has pieces where you can get that from game to game. The other issue is got nothing to do with scoring. It has everything to do with rebounding. And you're going to go up now against the Houston team that's number two in the country and attacking the glass. They don't rebound. They attack. And I know Syracuse saw North Carolina twice this year. The North Carolina Tar Heels, the number one rebounding team in the country. Syracuse was 1-1 against the Heels. Houston's going to pose a problem, right? Second chance points off a missed shot. to me, is the key to the entire game. Because I expect Buddy Bingham to be good. I expect somebody else from Syracuse to be able to make some shots. But how well will Syracuse defend the glass? Because Houston is going to come after you. And that, to me, is the game. How that question is answered will tell me who wins the ball game.
Yeah, I could agree with you more. It's also the shot selection from Houston. Houston doesn't shoot the three ball well, so will they fall victim to the desire to take the three against the zone? But you're right, Pack. I mean, you look at the win versus over West Virginia that Q's had in this tournament. They gave up 19 offensive rebounds in that game, and they were still able to win because of that ridiculous offensive output. This is a Houston team that's infinitely, that's markedly better on the backboard offensively than the Mountaineers are. Yeah. So it does become that huge challenge. If it's volleyball, you're going to have to be even better offensively than what you've been to win this game. So I don't think that's the path you want to take. You want to be a little bit better rebounding out of the zone, but it's been a vulnerability all year long. And what makes it so challenging against Houston, you're not talking about 7-foot rebounders. You're talking about guys who are blitzing the backboard from the perimeter, finding gaps in space, carving out some real estate down there, to grab rebounds and second chance. So you really have to go locate these guys. These are legitimate athletes with speed, agility, that move well laterally to find gaps to rebound it. There are gaps abound in the zone from Coach Boeheim. And so that will be a challenge there. I still imagine Houston gets double-figure rebounds, but if it becomes something like 20, this game leads towards Houston.
Yeah, it's a fascinating matchup. I want to go back, though, to this list that we just threw up on the screen here a couple minutes ago. And let's talk about some of these runs and memories of guys from the ACC that just went crazy in the NCAA tournament, because it's an impressive who's who on here. And I think it kind of rekindles some memories of yesteryear of some unbelievable moments, shots, games, and everything else. And again, we mentioned that Buddy Boeheim averaging 27.5 a game. Right, so far in the tournament. Again, he's been super hot in March. He's had, I think, five games of 25 or more points. But you go through this list. Dennis Scott. Now, Georgia Tech's had a great run this year, but for folks that remember Dennis Scott, who just went crazy.
Sharpshooter.
Right. I mean, and listen, he was Curry before Curry, right? It didn't matter where he was. You cross midcourt, and I got news for you. Dennis Scott was going to let it go. And that was an incredible run.
Yes, sir.
As Georgia Tech made it to the Final Four, eventually got beat to UNLV. But, man, they were a fun team to watch. Old Bobby Kremen's crew. But Dennis Scott would let it rip. And, boy, could he shoot.
Lights out. And that was a thinner version of Dennis. Some might remember him putting on a little bit more weight and being a true catch-and-shoot guy for the Orlando Magic. But that's where it all started. And that's where I was at the height of my love for the sport. As a youngster, was watching guys like Dennis Scott, who then could also attack a closeout, put it on the deck, hurt him at the mid-range. He was great in the open floor. He was a problem. I saw Lynn Bias on that list, too.
Yes,
you kidding me?
Sir.
Lynn Bias? Wow.
So beast. Sad, isn't it? I mean,
absolute stud. Absolute stud.
I know. It's
really sad.
You know, as far as ACC fans go, I think Lynn Bias is the guy. It's kind of like the JFK question. Do you remember where you were, for folks who are old enough? Do you remember where you were when Kennedy got shot? You kind of remember where you were when you heard that Lynn Bias had passed away. To me, that's kind of always been the analogy with ACC basketball fans that are old enough. And for folks that were born after Lynn Bias, man, I'm just telling you, that was one of the special dudes who have ever played in this league. And it's so sad to think what could have been with him on the next level with the Celtics, and who knows what it would have ever been. But he was such a great player. Not good, great basketball player. Special dude. Unbelievable.
Yeah, Pac, you talk about where you were. I mean, I was a mere 4 years old when the tragic news broke, but it was a cautionary tale that my parents, I mean, I wrote my DARE speech on drugs and resistance to drugs and alcohol, my speech on Lynn Bias. My parents schooled me on who he was because they knew I was a big basketball fan, but he was the cautionary tale of not giving in to peer pressure, staying away from crowds that are going to steer you in the wrong direction because your future's bright. And Lynn Bias was absolutely that. I mean, on draft night, what was in front of him and what we know about his drug use. I mean, at least what was speculated was it wasn't a lot of it. And it only takes one bad decision to ruin dreams and end a life. And it's, I don't want to go down this path, but whenever I think of Lynn Bias, I think of him being that story told to me of stay in your greatness and stay on the right path, because it only takes one bad decision.
Well, I mean, we talked about Michael Jordan and his amazing run, but the whole Jordan Bias thing just had the sense of, hey, that was going to be like the next great rivalry. And again, I know there was a number of great, incredible players that went on to the next level. But as far as ACC basketball goes, in the 80s, as tremendous as it was in this league, he was the guy. Now, and I'm telling you, when you start making list of twos and threes, best this, best that, Lynn Bias was on that list. I don't care what pom-pom you shook, he was on your list. He was that kind of player.
But isn't that the beauty of this thing, right, Pac? Like, this is what March delivers. Like, if you would have asked me calling one of Syracuse's games down the stretch, and I think it was Miami, a team, I can't remember who they played, but they just looked really bad. They got beat up on the glass. They weren't competing. And they got ran out of the gym. And I was just like, this team, March, they don't need to be thinking about the tournament.
Yeah.
But you got a legend on the sidelines in Coach Boeheim. You've got true skilled guys who are shot makers. And they put it together. They crept into this tournament. Some thought they didn't deserve to be here, but they're here. And they've captured this beautiful thing. And Buddy Boeheim's playing like a star. And we're talking about comparisons to Lynn Bias and Dennis Scott because of two games played. That's the power of this tournament. That's what makes it madness. You can have 25 games of mediocrity, come out here and do it at this stage with the history of this tournament, and it changes the trajectory and ultimate narrative of what your 2020-2021 season was. It's remarkable.
Yeah, I wonder too, as we now move forward in the Sweet 16, the lack of fans. You know, you get to this stage of the tournament, and everybody's starting about Cinderella. And again, I'm not calling Syracuse a Cinderella. As Jay Bayless said yesterday, they're from a Power 5 league, and we know who they are. I mean, Oral Roberts, yeah, you can go there if you want, but not Syracuse. Mm-hmm. But you get into the tournament, though, Jordan, and you've played it, that all of a sudden the lower seed has somebody in trouble, especially at this stage of the tournament. And the crowd becomes such a factor where, man, we want to see the little guy take care of business. And I'm not saying Syracuse is a little guy, but you know what? They are the 11th seed. And they're taking on a 2 seed this weekend. And I wonder the lack of a crowd, what that's going to do now as we get into this stage of the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, it's really interesting because, yeah, like you're saying, Oral Roberts, you think they're used to playing with limited crowds? You know, they know how to bring their own juice. You know, those are teams that are used to, the conditions in the hotels aren't the best. Oh, it's not 5-star dining and all, and the 5-star beds. Oral Roberts, team like that is like, let's go.
That's it.
Like those, that's the Cinderella vibe that comes with it for Syracuse. They weren't supposed to be here. Houston, this is a benchmark year for Houston.
Right.
Houston's got to find a way to get to the Final Four. Quentin Grimes, the National Player of the Year candidate. The pressure is on Houston. Syracuse is playing with house money. Guy you never want to fight in a bar is the one with nothing to lose. And Buddy Boeheim is out here playing free of mind. He's the deadliest shooter in this tournament. It's dangerous. Houston will be the tight team down the stretch, not Syracuse. They're the 11 seed. Weren't supposed to be here. Pressure's not on them. They can play free of mind, and just go out there and play basketball. It's always advantageous to the 11 seed over the 2 seed.
Yeah, there's stars made all the time. We'll talk about another star of the ACC when we come back after the break. And again, one of the things that happens in this tournament is the end. Right, only one team cuts down the nets, and we've seen incredible emotional stories that folks understood that, you know what, this is the last time I'm going to wear this jersey, and the emotional send off.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Truly one of the most inspirational student athletes the ACC seen in quite some time. Basically, ended her career with Syracuse being eliminated in the NCAA tournament. She goes by the name Tiana. That's all you need to know. Tiana. When you hear Tiana, you know exactly who I'm talking about. This was Tiana's emotional farewell, where you realize the end of an incredible career just happened. Check this out.
I mean, I would say that I'm proud of myself. Oh. just because, like, it was really difficult to come back. And I just don't feel like I was the same. But I'll just say, like, I'm proud of myself.
That's tough. After that, she went on Twitter and had some other things to say. She said, quote, "I never really showed people all of my emotions throughout my journey. My last interview in a Syracuse uniform meant a lot to me. You know, I opened up a side I hadn't shared before." She says, "You know what? You never know what someone's going to go through. So be kind. Resonates so well with me." She is a class act, and what a player. What a story.
Yeah. Yeah. What a story. What an inspiration. I mean, it's tough to hear. I mean, the finality of losing in the tournament always strikes a chord with me because I've been there before. It's a part of your life that ends in that moment. You'll never have back. Tiana's perspective is wildly different from anybody's in that regard, because she can compartmentalize that part and understand she's just thankful to have a new lease on life. What was really heartbreaking for me to hear, Pac, was her say, as an athlete, she wasn't the same. The numbers back that. If you're talking about somebody, you know, it's still impactful, don't get me wrong, but if you're talking about somebody who's dominant in the game, and for somebody who has her level of expectation to say, well, a fight for my life versus cancer brought me back to this game that I wasn't even supposed to return to, but I came back, and to her standard, it wasn't to the standard she's used to. It's heartbreaking to hear, but also to hear her reinforce she's proud of herself. She darn well better should be, because I don't know her, and I'm proud to say I've covered her. I'm proud that she's under the ACC umbrella, and we can call her our own because of what she's done for that university. When I think of Syracuse basketball, I'm telling you, no joke, I think of Carmelo and I think of Tiana. Those are the two names I think of if you mention Syracuse basketball. There's one of those jerseys in the rafters there at the Carrier Dome, and a bunch of other men alongside him in the Carrier Dome. Is there a woman's jersey in the Carrier Dome hanging from the rafters? If I think of Carmelo and I think of Tiana, why would you even hesitate for a second to put her jersey in the rafters? When you bring in recruits, and I remember being one, going to these universities, I look up in the rafters and I'm curious who those people are. Are they people I want to emulate? Do I want to dream to become them? I don't know if there's a person on the Syracuse campus that wouldn't dream for a recruit to come in to become when they leave Tiana. That jersey should be hanging in the rafters and should speak to every recruit. When you come here, this is our level of expectation. Put the jersey in the rafters, celebrate it, and never let that legacy be forgotten, because it's as impressive as you'll find in college sports.
Yeah, Brent Nax, and I know we mentioned this yesterday with Kelly Gramlich. I'll read it again. But I think it's a spot on. He says, "Sorry it came to an end tonight, but there's no doubt Tiana wrote one of the greatest stories ever told by a Syracuse athlete. Can't wait to see here number four hit the rafters at the Carrier Dome, because we're going to get that done, right?" He's talking about to John Wildhack, the athletic director. I think, to be honest with you, it's kind of a no-brainer. She represented everything you're supposed to do as a student athlete. And on top of that, she fought the good fight and won. And I know she's sitting there disappointing with the loss and the season's over, but really she won. Won big time. And like I said, one of the most inspirational student athletes I think this league has seen in a long, long time. So I hope that happens at Syracuse. And again, they know their business better than we do. But that would be a fitting tribute to see that number go up in the corner of the Carrier Dome for what she represented, not only as a player, but more importantly, as a student athlete and a person representing Syracuse.
She's in her mid-20s, and we spend our life not trying to achieve this. It's not realistic to want to try to achieve. But to be known as one name. How many people are one name people in the world? There's Beyonce. There's a Cher. Dabo's even achieved that.
Dabo.
She's Tiana. And what you say, Tiana, I mean, hey, Pac, I love you, but if you say Mark, there's a million of them. If you say Jordan, there's one you're thinking of, and it ain't me. So to speak to just the achievement, she's a one-name brand. She's achieved so much through the inspiration of the fight But also, let's not forget, she's decorated. The all-time assist leader there at Syracuse. She has achieved. Like, there's a confluence of both here, and the intersection of it is excellence. So it's not like you're giving this to some role player. It's just a good story, but she wasn't really that good. No, she was elite. She was a great player to go with the incredible human being she is. I put that jersey as big as any in the rafters because it speaks to the sport and the university in a way that everybody there is proud of. And when she said she's proud of herself, there is a legion of thousands, hundreds of thousands behind you that feel the same way, Tiana. Hat tip to you.
Yeah, and again, not only was she a tremendous player, but I don't even think of it that way, right? I mean, that's when you know you've really arrived. That, yeah, I was a really decorated player, but what you did away from the court, I thought was even more impressive. Just the courage to say, you know, I'm going to go fight it. Let's go. And she did. She came back, and she, again, handles herself a class. She's been on the show a number of times. And, again, if you've not seen the documentary here on ACC Network, do yourself a favor. If you feel down about life a little bit, go watch that. And I guarantee you, it'll kick you in your rear end, and you'll get moving. And she has just been, like you said, a joy to cover. And we wish her nothing but happiness and success moving forward. But she is a great, great story and a true inspiration. And again, I hope Syracuse does put that number up in the rafters.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.